Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. It was just a week ago that the first team based outside of the United States won an NBA championship, and that was the Toronto Raptors, who took a bite out of the defending champion Golden State Warriors in six games, closing out Oracle Arena's final game on a sour note for those California fans. We're taking this opportunity, now that we've had a week to digest the Raptors' big win, to bring you this segment of my colleague Jim Stevenson's The Game Room podcast. It's available each Wednesday at voanews.com. Jim wraps up the Raptors' incredible run to the NBA championship this spring. Take it away, Jim.
Because we're from the greatest city in the world, and we are the NBA 2019 champions of the world.
The city of Toronto, the country, the country of Canada, we did it. We bought a home, and we want everybody to celebrate.
The Toronto Raptors are NBA champions, and for point guard Kyle Lowry, it's been a long time coming.
The words can't explain how I feel. It's been a long, long time, 13 years. Of NBA basketball, and to be able to say I'm a world champion, you know, it makes me feel great. And to do it with the group of guys that we did it with is amazing.
An NBA expansion team in 1995, Toronto becomes the first team based outside of the United States to win the league championship. The defending champion Golden State Warriors were looking to force a decisive Game 7 after coming from behind in the closing seconds to win Game 5 by 1 point.
People thought that we would kind of be like, oh man, we gave away Game 5, but the group of guys that we have, we've been able to stay level-headed the whole time and understanding that we had a team that was going to come out here and play extremely hard. Fans were going to be loud, and they were going to fight to the death, and that's the one thing about that group. They fought to the death, and they got some great guys down there, great coaches, and you know, we tip our hats to those guys because they you know, they're the definition of champions.
Toronto held off the Warriors, plagued by a string of serious injuries, to take Game 6, 114-110, and earn the first championship in franchise history. Forward Kawhi Leonard, who won an NBA title in 2014 as a member of the San Antonio Spurs, was named the finals most valuable player.
Obviously, I didn't come out in this series trying to win it. It was a whole group, collectively. Tonight, Fred played amazing in that fourth. Kyle played amazing tonight throughout the whole game. Pascal played big. You know, I just kept striving and pushing, and, you know, I ended up with the trophy, but everybody deserves it.
Golden State coach Steve Kerr offered no apologies for losing, impressed with his team's championship runs over the past five seasons, resiliency amid injuries, and up against a tough Toronto team that targeted superstar Steph Curry.
You know, Steph was getting hounded this entire series. Toronto did a great job on him, sending two, three people at him, hounding him and harassing him, and you know, especially without Clay to rely on in that fourth quarter, I thought he got a little worn down.
Curry, who has single-handedly fought off teams in the past and put them away with last-second buzzer beaters, wasn't able to send Golden State to a seventh game.
Yeah, it's a tough feeling, you know, being on this side of losing in the finals, but I think a lot has been, you know, proven about who we are as a team and the fight that we have and all the adversity that we dealt with, and, you know, this entire playoff run, and it's a one possession game to keep our season alive tonight. So we'll be thinking about this one. It's tough, but our DNA and who we are, and you know, the character that we have on this team, I wouldn't bet against us, you know, being back on the stage, you know, next year and going forward.
Even losing, Coach Kerr was amazed his team still had a chance.
Amazement that we're sitting in this position, you know, with, you know, during the game, we have a chance to win the game. but force a game seven, go back to Toronto, and you just think how has this group of guys put themselves in position to do it.
Curry says the Warriors, with three championships in the past 5 years, are not finished as many predict.
You know, how hard do you work to try to get back to the stage? You know, soak up this feeling, because obviously we celebrated, we've had champagne, we've had, you know, rings, but this is the more motivating feeling in terms of how do you respond, how do you turn the page to new challenges ahead. So we'll be all right.
There is some doubt about the future of Toronto with Kawhi Leonard now a free agent.
I wanted to make history here, and that's all I did. I just, you know, I'm still playing basketball no matter what jersey I have on. And the guys here been, you know, making runs in the playoffs before I came. So I know they're a talented team, and, you know, I just came in with the right mindset. Let's go out and win ball games.
As for singer Drake, who was at the Raptors parade, the Toronto win breaks the so-called Drake curse, where teams with whom he has previously appeared lose.
I don't know nothing about the Drake curse.
A lot of y'all are still sounding like last year. The game needs changing.
I don't know nothing about the Drake curse. That's my homie. That's my friend. So I don't know nothing about the curse.
I just want to be successful.
This concludes the session in here for tonight. Thank you. Safe travels, everyone.
That's my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson's The Game Room podcast, wrapping up the NBA Finals. Thank you, Jim. I'm Dan Friedell, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The NBA season never seems to end. Before you know it, we'll be talking about the preseason in late September. But before we get all the way to that point of the year, we still have to find out who some of the new faces will be in the league. And tonight's a big night at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. Dozens of young basketball hopefuls from around the world will start their NBA careers at the NBA draft in just about 7 hours. We know that the phenomenal young player from Duke University, he's still a teenager, Zion Williamson, will be the first player chosen. He's going to the New Orleans Pelicans. VOA intern Ryan Handel talked about Zion during Wednesday's show. Now, we think the next pick will be Ja Morant from Murray State. Morant's story is a bit more interesting in the sense that in these days of scouts knowing every potential college basketball player by the time they turn 13, Morant was an unknown player coming out of high school. He only developed into an NBA prospect while in college. It looks like he'll be chosen by the Memphis Grizzlies and make his way across the border from Kentucky, the home of his alma mater, Murray State, to Tennessee, the next-door state in which the Grizzlies play. My colleague Steve Miller is here with more from Zion and Ja as they get ready to hear their names called later today by NBA Commissioner Adam Silver in Brooklyn. Sporty greetings, Steve.
Sporty greetings, Dan. Projected number one draft pick Zion Williamson said he is still improving as an athlete, but is ready to play in the NBA.
Personally, honestly, I think I got better with everything because I'm still 18 and I don't ever want to be a finished product. My three-point shot improved a lot over the season. Started off a little rough, but improved a lot towards the end. And I think my ability to adjust to the game from high school to college changed a lot. And just I think one thing I'm good at is just my will to win. I feel like when I want to win, I'll do whatever I need to do to win.
Williamson made the statement yesterday during a media availability in New York City, and the New Orleans Pelicans are expected to select Williamson as the number one overall pick.
Just to be in the NBA is all I ask for, and wherever team I end up, I know that I'm going to give them my all. I'm such a simple dude. Like, I just want to hoop. Like, whether they made those changes or not, I'm still going out there. I'm just excited to be out there. I just want to play basketball, pretty much.
Williamson said he does not have a favorite NBA team, but after meeting with New Orleans, he said joining them would be like
joining a family.
During Williamson's one season at Duke University, the 6'7" power forward played in 33 games for the Blue Devils, averaging 22.6 points and 8.9 rebounds per game while shooting 68% from the field. He was also an NCAA Player of the Year. If selected by the Pelicans, Williamson could be the player in which Vice President of Basketball Operations David Griffin could build a winning team in the Western Conference around. Another top pick prospect, Ja Morant, point guard for Murray State, is expected to be the second overall draft pick, which goes to the Memphis Grizzlies.
It's very exciting. Obviously, being under the radar 4 years ago, questioning myself, was I good enough? And now I have an opportunity to be one of the top picks in this draft.
But we're not just talking about domestic athletes. International players are also poised to feature prominently in the 2019 NBA draft. RJ Barrett from Canada is expected to be drafted in the top three. Sekou Doumbouya could also become the highest drafted French player, and Rui Hachimura could become the second player ever drafted from Japan. That's all I have. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Steve. Right now it looks like Doumbouya, born in the West African country of Guinea, will be the African player chosen the earliest. Hachimura, who attended Gonzaga, the small but powerful basketball school in the western U.S. state of Washington, will be chosen sometime after the 10th pick. Now, a little bit later than that, sometime between 10 and 20, here at Voice of America, we're excited to see what happens to Bol Bol. He's the son of South Sudan icon Manute Bol. After a career at the University of Oregon cut short by some injuries, Bol Bol is 2.18 meters tall, athletic, and an intriguing prospect. If he can stay healthy, he could go on to have an outstanding career in the NBA. However, we all remember highly touted players of that size whose careers have been limited by injuries. Bill Walton and Greg Oden come to mind right away, but there have been many others. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. After this VOA programming note, we'll be back with some soccer news as teams prepare for the African Cup of Nations kicking off Friday in Egypt, and a look at the final day of the group stage of the FIFA Women's World Cup going on in France.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
The Voice of America, VOA.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Our friend in Nigeria, Iron Mike Mbonye, joins us now with a look at how the Super Eagles might fare in the Cup of Nations. Nigeria takes on Burundi in its opening match of the tournament. Madagascar and Guinea are also on the schedule. Mike talked with former Super Eagles team member Adema Fuludu about the state of the Nigerian men's national team ahead of the big tournament. Welcome, Adema and Mike.
Yeah, I think this set of Super Eagles are a lucky bunch, just like the 1994 squad, where preparation was key for their going to the AFCON. And they have been able to play some friendlies, some quality friendlies, and they've been in camp in and out. You know that in camping is because most of the boys are from the foreign countries, so it's difficult to keep them for long. However, with the status of those playing in their clubs and their fitness level monitored by the coach, they are doing a good job. I think their preparation is on course.
How would you rate the chances of the team against others when the AFCON tournament begins?
Well, we have a name as Nigeria, and we are a country to be beaten always. But for this AFCON, if you ask me to throw my money in, I will not give the Eagles the highest chance to win the AFCON. We don't have superstars in our team as it is, but I think youthfulness is going for us. We have a lot of young players that are doing very well, that are strong and that are hungry. But you see, the North African teams like Egypt, Morocco, and some of the other teams that are going there, Senegal, I think they are a high-quality side as it is today in their rating. So we need to contend very well, but we'll get there if we are able to go through the preliminary stages first.
Some analysts suggest that Coach Gernot Rohr, the Super Eagles manager, should include or add some members of the Nigerian under-20 team that just played in the FIFA under-20 World Cup. Your take on this?
Well, for the people who are saying for the under-20, the under-20, they had an abysmal performance. Nobody will want to look at a team where they completely failed as it is. And they are supposed to be young players, vibrant, who are supposed to show a lot of skill and energy and talent and techniques, but we can't really pick players from there to come and put in the Super Eagles team right now. I've always been an advocate of homeboys playing for the national team as in going to AFCON, that we should also include some of our home-based players to give a sense of belonging to our league and to also help it develop, because I believe that, you know, a country's quality of football, it should be determined by the league they play. And so we should also try to encourage most of these boys that are playing here. They may not be top shot quality, but giving opportunities like the train abroad and play with good facilities, they will get better, because we are all talents here. But for the under-20, I don't believe that we have people that can go into that team as it is right now. If you're looking at the under-23, maybe. But for the under-20, for me, no.
Thank you, Mike. Mike and all of our correspondents in Africa will keep you up to date with reports on the tournament as it gets going in the coming days. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now let's catch you up on the FIFA Women's World Cup as the group stage winds up this evening in France. As I mentioned on Wednesday's show, there were two matches in Group D. England defeated Japan 2-0, and Scotland and Argentina combined for 6 goals in a 3-3 tie. Now there are 4 games on Thursday, as the 8 teams from groups E and F will be playing. 2 games are going on right now. Both of them are heading toward halftime. Netherlands and Canada are tied at 0, as are Cameroon and New Zealand. But the big games that people are watching will be it'll feature 2 of the world's top teams. That's Sweden against the United States. And the remaining game today is Thailand against Chile. Now, while the American team on paper looks to be stronger than Sweden, there is some question as to whether Team USA might actually try to lose or tie the game on purpose in order to secure an easier passage to the finals in the knockout stage. My colleague Steve Miller will be here shortly to discuss that possibility. Those two teams have plenty of history. Sweden knocked the Americans out of the Olympic soccer tournament in Brazil 3 years ago. American coach Jill Ellis said she thinks Thursday's game will be competitive. And I quote, "It is going to be a very intense game. Combative game, a game probably with a lot of transitions." American player Kristen Press, responding to the idea that perhaps her team might not play up to its full potential, said she thinks losses in big tournaments like the World Cup and the Olympics are always motivating, and her team wants to avoid that. She said, and I quote, "You always play to win." Now, the group winners and second place teams advance to the knockout stage, so that makes 12 teams out of 6 groups, and the best remaining 4 third place teams also move on. That's where it gets tricky. I'm joined now by my colleague Steve Miller to try to make some sense of this. Sporty greetings, Steve.
And another sporty greetings to you, Dan.
Steve, it's good to be here chatting about the machinations in the last day of this tournament. So, first off, if Team USA wins this match today, they're the Group F winner.
Yes, and also if they draw because of the goal differential with
Thailand.
You just can't come out of that 13-0 win when you look at the other goals scored in Group F. I mean, if they have a draw against Sweden, they will be the Group F top winners.
That's a good point. So that's an important point about the way that the tiebreakers work. It's points obtained, goal differential, total goals scored, points obtained in the matches between the teams in question. Now, this goes all the way down the ladder. The eighth tiebreaker is just drawing names out of a hat. That's pretty crazy.
That's always a lot of fun. So as you mentioned, like the big theory now is how strong is the U.S. going to play in this match? Because some think that, you know, if you look at the knockout round brackets, the winner of the Sweden-U.S. match, who comes in first place in Group F, is going to face Spain. And then the winner of that match goes on to play whoever France is going to play in the knockout round.
Assuming France wins that game.
And that's the thing. You know, France is a very strong team. Nothing is for certain in these tournaments, as we know from the U.S. getting knocked out in the Olympics. So, you know, if the U.S. theory is put into play by some where they opt to maybe save a little reserve and not play as hard and come out with a loss in this game and still make it through the second round, you know, they are actually going to play in the second bracket, and they're not going to have to play a stronger team, and they wouldn't be looking to play France until the actual finals. But they would be facing Germany in round two of the knockouts if they were to go advance, as well as Germany.
You know, Steve, the important thing to note here is the development of women's soccer internationally. You know, in the old days, it used to be the Americans and some of the Scandinavian teams. The Brazilians were always strong with Marta, who scored her world-leading World Cup goal yesterday, 17th goal among men and women. You never know what's going to happen. So let me say real quick, Steve. USA team going to play to win the game today or not?
I think they are. I mean, they are the number one team in the world. They aren't going to sell themselves short. I think, as we heard the players and the coaches, they're going to play to their full potential, because even if you come away with a loss because you're taking it easy to try and save yourself for the next round, you never know what kind of mental impact that could have.
Yeah, that's a good point. So now we've got 12 teams that are going to get in, first, second place teams. We've got four remaining third place teams. Currently, China and Brazil are in, which means there are two teams left out of Nigeria, Argentina, Cameroon, and Chile. Who do you think is going to make it, Steve?
That is a good question. So we have Cameroon and Argentina kind of already in the mix. They're tentatively filling those last two slots. Cameroon and New Zealand are playing today. The winner of that match could actually go into that final four, so to speak, and bump out Argentina, who's only in there with 2 points. So a win today would give a team 3 points. Cameroon or New Zealand would do that. The other is, you know, you have the Netherlands and Canada kind of in the mix as well. So you could see that affecting some actions. But Thailand and Chile are also in the mix as well. Thailand is in a bad spot after the U.S. loss, but they have already given up 18 goals in the competition thus far, which sets a Tizer record by Argentina back in 2007 for the most goals given up in a tournament.
So one thing we're looking at in one of these games that's in halftime, Cameroon and New Zealand scoreless. Now, if New Zealand remains scoreless, they'll have an ignominious mark on their record for this World Cup, right?
Right. You know, we should note also that 4 years ago on this date, Cameroon was knocked out of the tournament, and New Zealand, if they do not score today, they would be also knocked out without scoring at all in the tournament. And I'm pretty sure that there have been very few, if no other teams ever kicked out of the tournament without scoring at all.
Steve, we'll see what happens. We'll be excited to watch these games later on this afternoon. That wraps up the June 20th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Workinger and engineer Idan Uko. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, how long can a head of state maintain effective leadership? Some African leaders are forced out of office, while others respect the political process. The politics of transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
A study led by the University of Buffalo, New York, has confirmed the identity of fossilized hyena teeth that were discovered in the North American Arctic in the 1970s. The fossils were found to be of an extinct species called the running hyena. According to the study, the fossils discovered in Canada's Yukon Territory date between 1.4 million and 850 million years ago during the last ice age. Although scientists had earlier identified the hyena fossils, this new study not only confirms their identity, but also provides detailed information on the discovery. Fossils of this animal species had been previously found in Africa, Europe, Asia, and the southern United States. The study authors theorized that the ancient hyenas made their way from Asia to North America via the Bering Land Bridge that once connected the two continents. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Thanks for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. We're honoring Avicii, one of EDM's greatest producers, who tragically passed away last year, with a month-long giveaway of his new album, Tim. The album includes vocals from many prominent artists, including Chris Martin and more. Tune in at 1500 Universal every weekday in June for your chance to win a free copy of Tim. Anyone who makes a request has a chance to win.
Border Crossings!
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information. VOA.